Good evening, everyone. I'm Tom Lounges. It's time for Midwest Beats here on Lakeshore Public Radio. Thank you for tuning in and being part of my evening. Tonight, we're going to talk about Bruce Borders, the Indiana State Representative. He's also Elvis. That's right. He is a performer and a politician. We're going to find out how he weaves those two professions together. And we're going to talk about a big show coming up on March 14th. That's this Thursday at the Art Theater at 230 Main Street in downtown Hobart. So Bruce Borders will be coming up in just a moment as Elvis. But first, let's give you the real deal because Jose likes this one. It's Suspicious Minds.
We're caught in a trap. I can't walk out because I love you too much, baby. Why can't you see what you're doing to me when you don't believe a word?
Trap. Can't walk out. Elvis Presley and Suspicious Minds. And that's going out to my engineer, producer, Jose, because I said, what's your favorite Elvis song? He said, Suspicious Minds. I said, then we'll play it. And that is the last time you're going to hear Elvis's voice on tonight's show. But you'll hear someone that sounds a lot like Elvis. I'm talking about Bruce Borders. He is Elvis Presley. At least he will be on March 14th when he comes to the Art Theater at 230 Main Street in downtown Hobart. 7 to 9 p.m., he will be putting on the jumpsuit, singing the hits, and swiveling body parts. Mr. Borders, are you with us?
I'm doing fine. Yeah, how you doing, Tom?
I am doing great, and I'll tell you, we're looking forward to seeing you as Elvis. And I've got to ask you, I mentioned before we brought you on, before we played Elvis, that you are from the Indiana House of Representatives. You are also a professional entertainer. So in the tradition of the chicken and the egg, which came first, politics or performing?
Performing did. I started doing the Elvis show. My gosh, so many years ago, way back in 1975 in high school and in swing choir. And then later after I was elected mayor, the media jumped onto it, ended up doing the Letterman show a couple of times, Oprah, Joan Rivers, Entertainment Tonight, Access Hollywood. And over the years, I've done over 5,000 concerts. Over 5,000 concerts. It's been a busy time for me.
Well, you're coming to Hobart here on Thursday in just 2 days, and this is a special fundraiser of sorts. So tell us what this event is all about.
Yeah, it's I got a call from a friend who lived up there, and I believe it's, I'm not sure exactly what all it's for. I think there's some political leaning to it. I'm not sure if that's the whole thing or not, the whole gist of it, but they're definitely bringing me up, a big part because of my role as a state representative.
Mm-hmm. Now, you started out as a mayor of your hometown in Jacksonville, Indiana?
Jasonville,
Indiana.
Yeah, you were close there, yeah.
Pretty close. Now, whereabouts is Jasonville? We're near Gary here, as you know.
Sure, we're about 30 miles south of Terre Haute. I don't know if you've ever heard of Shackamack State Park, but... we're about 30 miles south of Terre Haute. We're down in the southwest part of the state, anyhow.
Well, I know where Terre Haute is. I remember that when Elvis died, they put the pressing plants in overdrive. They worked 24/7 pressing Elvis records because of the demand.
Yeah.
Big CBS stamping plant there for vinyl, and vinyl is back.
Right. Yeah, it is. I was noticing that I saw a thing online the other day. They were talking about last year, for the first time in a number of years, vinyl records and, of course, CDs actually outsold, downloading off the internet. And I was amazed at that. I was glad to see that, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But and it surprises me now how many people are going ahead and buying the vinyl albums again.
It's a backlash against technology, I think.
Evidently. I don't know if the new albums, I assume they're digital as far as the quality on them. I've actually not bought one. I do own a lot of CDs, mm-hmm. and a lot of Elvis CDs at that, but I assume the large vinyl, are being played on probably digital record players that...
They do have the Blu-ray record players, but, the old traditional record players with the cords are the go-to for most people. I actually run a record store that's two doors down from the Art Theater where you're playing. You'll have to pop in, and I'll give you the grand tour of all the vinyl.
Absolutely. So, in other words, they're still, I guess, for lack of a better word, they're playing, for the analog sound.
Yes.
Is what they're after. Okay.
And a lot of them are digitally remastered, but they're taken from the original master tapes, and they're on what they call 180-gram vinyl, which is like the perfect weight from what they've scientifically established. I guess the 180-gram weight kind of hugs the turntable real, real tight, and it doesn't have the wow and flutter and all that other stuff that we had on some of the old ones. If you remember, especially talking about Elvis, the RCA Camden releases were very flexible. They were like flexi-discs. You could almost bend them in the shape of a taco, and they wouldn't break. And the thinner the plastic, the worse the sound. That's probably why they were usually the budget albums. But, this new technology has really brought it up to speed. And for the first time, we're outselling CDs by vinyl like 3-1, 4-1.
Wow, that's cool. I mean, and do you think part of it is that people like to have that big sleeve and, the things, mm-hmm. the pictures that come along with it, just sort of the, I'll admit there is a charm to that. There really is. It's like I have a huge collection of Elvis 45 RPMs and some of the old 78s and so forth, and some of the extended play. I guess they were the extended plays? Were those
the EPs, the 45s?
Yeah,
those would have anywhere from 3 to 5 songs on them generally.
Right. Right, and I'll have to admit, I like just the, you know, I obviously I like the record, but I like the sleeve. There's just something magical about having that sleeve with the pictures and whatever the latest movie it was promoting and mm-hmm. so forth. There's something pretty cool about that.
Definitely. Well, you'll have to pop in because they are starting to reissue all the Elvis stuff on new pressing vinyl. And let's talk about Elvis a little bit. What sure. got you into Elvis? Why, as a performer, was Elvis your go-to?
I was always a huge Elvis fan, but I think what really brought it about, there were a couple of things. There was our next door neighbor, a guy named Johnny Turley. In fact, Johnny's still alive, but he looked a lot like Elvis. He genuinely did. And when he would come home from the Army, you know, he would sit out on his back porch and, you know, I was just a kid, you know, probably 5 years old, and he would spit shine his boots and he would talk with me and, you know, and he befriended me as a child and never, you know, and never one of these things that, you know, go away, you know, I don't want to talk to you, you're a little kid. He was always very friendly. And anyhow, I think the fact that I had a next door neighbor who looked a lot like Elvis and who in my mind was kind of, you know, my personification of Elvis in my neighborhood, that was part of it. But the other thing, too, was my dad had bought one of those huge stereos for my mom. In fact, it was an RCA stereo, you know, and that was back in the days when you bought a stereo not just because of the record player inside or the radio. You know, the radio that was built in with it as well, but she bought it because of the nice big, you know, wooden cabinet that came in.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about 6 feet long. And along with that, with that record player, you got to choose two albums of your own choosing. And I think, if I remember right, I know he got, I think the other one was either a Frank Sinatra or an Engelbert Humperdinck, you know, because Mom liked those
right.
artists. But the other album he chose for was the Elvis album, How Great Thou Art. And so as a five-year-old, I would listen to that play over and over and over. My mom had a beautiful soprano voice. She was always singing along with that. And I began singing with it and grew up in the Assembly of God Church, the same denomination that Elvis was part of. And
mm-hmm.
and I think the combination of the neighbor who looked a lot like Elvis, and in my mind kind of was my local Elvis, and then that Elvis album, How Great Thou Art, probably is what kind of sunk the deal, or not sunk the deal, but sealed the deal for me.
Right. And it's funny that, you know, Elvis is the king of rock and roll, but the only time that he won a Grammy was for his sacred music, his gospel stuff.
Absolutely, yeah. I thought that same thing over the years as well. Yeah.
That just seems very odd, considering how much accolades he's had for his rock and roll, and even his country. I mean, he did it all. But
without a doubt, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and in fact, what's funny is, you know, anytime Elvis did a tune, no matter who originally recorded that tune, you know, because he did, you know, a fair amount of cover tunes as well,
mm-hmm.
then it became Elvis's tune.
Right. Oh, My Way is a perfect example.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Sinatra had the huge hit with it, and of course, Paul Anka wrote it, but even though Frank's was indelible, and still is, Elvis's, it became his song all over again.
Oh, without a doubt. Oh, yeah. In fact, after he died, you know, that version off the CBS TV special, that thing just played and played and played on the radio. I remember, you know, listening to that as I was traveling. It was constantly popping up, that version of My Way.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of traveling, on average, how many dates do you do a year now as Elvis versus maybe early on when you were starting out?
Anywhere between 50 and 100. In fact, I just had a concert. I just got home yesterday. I was really tired. It was because it was a really busy time. I was in session on Thursday, left the State House, went to the airport, flew down to Florida, had a concert Saturday night down in Jensen Beach, Florida, and then was back on Monday just in time for session. So, and I've had that happen before where I'll fly off and do maybe a TV show in Los Angeles or New York or whatever, and then fly back and get in session just in time. I've probably the farthest I've had to do that and have to make it work out was when I did a concert in St. Croix in the Virgin Islands. I had session on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
On Friday, we were in late that week. We were late Friday night, and then Saturday morning, I flew down to San Juan, Puerto Rico, took an island hop to St. Croix, got a ride to the stage, landed in St. Croix at 4 o'clock, was on the stage at 6, back to the hotel by midnight, and then the next morning had to catch an island hop back to San Juan and back to Indianapolis for the State House on Monday.
So, wow.
Yeah, and that's happened, you know, on a fairly regular basis, actually.
So do you have your own version of the Lisa Marie jet to get around? I mean, wow, no, that's a lot of travel.
Absolutely not, no. That's too bad. That would have made the trip much more palatable for me, to be honest with you.
Again, my guest tonight here on Midwest Beat at Lakeshore Public Radio is Bruce Borders. He is the nationally renowned Elvis, as well as an Indiana State representative. We're going to talk a little more about both aspects of that career in just a minute and where you can see him this Thursday. But first, let's go back to a YouTube video that features, we heard Elvis doing Suspicious Minds. Now we're going to hear Bruce Borders doing a song from 1963. This is a classic Elvis, Devil in Disguise, and a little medley. A little extra thrown in.
You look like an angel. Walk like an angel. Talk like an angel. But I got wine. You're the devil in disguise. Oh, yes, you are. Devil in disguise.
Never kissed an angel. Let me kiss.
If I said I love you, would I be speaking out of turn? I'm only human, but I'm willing to love. Angel, make my wish come true. Let me be in heaven, here on earth with you. Angel, angel, angel.
Bruce Borders as Elvis, and that's off YouTube, one of a couple of different videos you can catch him at, or better yet, just come see him live March 14th, this Thursday, 7 to 9 p.m., right here in Northwest Indiana, representing the region at the Art Theater, 230 Main Street, just two doors down from the Record Bin. So come say hi to me, then go see Bruce as Elvis. And again, this is a fundraiser of sorts. I'm not quite sure what it's exactly for, but it's to benefit the Hobart Republican Party for some different projects they're working on. And you can get more information by calling Jim at 219-942-0376. That's 219-942-0376. And you can keep up with Bruce at bruceborders.com. It's easy to find him. He's the guy in the blue jumpsuit on the homepage.
That's right.
You mentioned Bruce A.G. Curtis Hill, who is the current Indiana Attorney General. He also does Elvis. Is this like a Republican thing now? You're all going to put on jumpsuits for the sessions?
I'm guessing so. In fact, I've teased him about that. I said, you know, I used to have the State House all to myself, and I said, now you've come in and, you know, you've stepped into my turf here. And the funny thing is, we did a duet together a couple of years ago on the song My Way, and I loaned him one of my jumpsuits, and you could tell he was taken with it. In fact, the people that made Elvis's jumpsuits actually make mine, and anyhow, so he was, you know, and I think he's got a decent one, but I don't think he had anything nearly that professional, and and it fit him, and so he was really glad to wear those threads. He was pretty enamored with them.
So we need to have a political battle of the Elvises, maybe, to raise funds one day.
Absolutely, yeah.
That would be fun. That would be fun. Of course, Curtis Hill, he grew up in Elkhart, Indiana, and he's representing us now downstate. Let's talk a little bit about the style of Elvis you do. I've worked with Omar Farag. I'm sure you're familiar with him and the Elvis birthday tours that they do. I've worked with Sean Clush and with Trent Carlini and Rick Sacedo and all these guys over the years. I've had them on the show. I've done concerts with them. And all of them seem to specialize in a certain period of Elvis. Some are the movie Elvis. Some are the young Elvis. Some are the GI Elvis. And a lot of them are doing the jumpsuit Elvis. Do you cover all aspects in your show, or are you primarily one era of Elvis?
Well, I mean, I definitely wear the jumpsuits, and you know, that's my favorite. I guess if you were to ask costuming, that's my favorite costuming to wear. But you know, as you well know, when Elvis was on stage, I mean, he still did, you know, Love Me Tender, you know, from 1956. He did Teddy Bear, you know, Return to Sender. You know, so I mean, he did all of his hits from, well, not all of them. He had over 400, but I mean, he did hits from throughout his entire career. And so I guess as far as the clothing, it's definitely the jumpsuit era. But as far as the repertoire of music, it's going to cover his entire career. But in a sense, the same way that he did, you know, even into the 70s as he did his concerts and so forth. Right. Covered, you know, a large repertoire of his music. And what's interesting about that, I've, you know, got a ton of Elvis books, a huge library that fills up, you know, several bookcases full of Elvis books. But, you know, even when he was on stage at the Las Vegas Hilton, occasionally he was, you know, fearful that the fans would be getting bored, you know, hearing the same tunes over. Mm-hmm. So he actually got the idea one time to just put out a suggestion box, you know. And of course, this is a guy that's selling out every show, you know, thousands of seats. But it's funny, you know, when he was in Vegas for these extended stints, you know, possibly he himself maybe was getting bored, and so he assumed that the fans, sensing that same boredom. So he put out a suggestion box, and the funny thing was, though, that they still requested the same songs that he was always doing, from throughout his entire career. And so it's all cover hits from the 50s, 60s, and the 70s, but the attire will definitely be the jumpsuit era.
Right. Okay. What is your favorite Elvis song? Let's say you're getting ready to do the show and you're looking forward to that moment in the show that you're really going to get to your favorite song and you really do 120% on that one because that's the one that means the most to you. What song would that be?
Actually, one I really love to perform is My Way. I just like the dynamics of that song and so forth. But as far as my favorite Elvis tune of all time, it's probably the song I'll Never Know. It's off the Elvis album, Love Letters from Elvis. And the reason for that, my mother, who went home to be with the Lord in April of 2013, that was her favorite Elvis tune. So I always enjoy doing that song in concert as a tribute to her. And so it's a beautiful love ballad, and it always brings special emotion to me to do that in her honor, actually.
So is that one we'll hear in Hobart on Thursday? Is that one that's in the set all the time for you?
It is, absolutely, yeah.
Another song that people don't think of often, but that when I've talked to Elvis fans over the years, especially the ladies, the song that seems to hit a note with them is Mama Love the Roses.
I've recorded that song before on one of my CDs. I need to check and see about just kind of reminding myself and the words on that. I think I have the background music to that, and I may pull that off just since you've mentioned it. You're right, that is a beautiful song.
It's a moving song. It's one that brings out emotions. Everyone's got a mother, and you can relate to the words of it. You can relate to the sentiment of it, and it's one of those that never really got a lot of attention. It was always under the radar, but when someone sings it, you see the eyes light up, and people say, oh, yeah, I remember that.
Right. In fact, it's I even know what the picture sleeve for the 45 that I was on, and it's kind of if I remember right, it was sort of an odd pairing of what was on the flip side of it, and I want to say it was maybe like a Christmas tune or something like that that was on the flip side. I'll have to look at that again and see. But I remember thinking that because it's a picture of him wearing a white suit, not a jumpsuit, but a white suit, standing in, almost what looks to be like a funeral home type of setting. And it's actually a really striking photo of him. But again, that's just a little bit of Elvis history there. But from what I remember, the flip side on it is not one that seems to tend to match. Mm-hmm. That's one of those little curiosity facts I'm kind of just pulling out of my head here. But anyhow,
the only two times I can remember Elvis being in a white suit was when he did "If I Can Dream" on the 68 special, and also in. Live a Little, Love a Little, when he played the guy that was like the coordinator of the talents and something. He always had a white suit and a cigar and a brimmed hat.
Then also in The Trouble with Girls.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then on the Elvis album, How Great Thou Art, he's wearing a white suit as well.
That's true.
Yeah.
So, interesting stuff. Elvis, when I first saw him in 77, it was shortly before he passed. It was the last time he played Chicago. And I had been a big fan for years. My sisters are a little older than me. I was born in 1959. They were class of 64, 65. So I used to sneak into the movies, the drive-in movies, to catch the Elvis films with all their girlfriends. So I was definitely ahead of the curve, and my friends thought I was odd. They were listening to Led Zeppelin and Pink Floyd in their teen years. I was listening to King Creole, And
sure.
When you were growing up, you're I'm thinking about my age.
I was born in 1959 as well.
Okay, so were you listening to Elvis as a teenager? Did your friends think you were the odd duck out? Because mine certainly did.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. In fact, I was strangely enough, in high school, I was a math and science major, and then I also had an art major, and I was always doing these. I forget the name of these pens, but they were like. They were like, you'd push down on them and they would release ink. And And then you would iron them. You'd take wax paper and iron them. And I was always making my own Elvis T-shirts. And actually, they were, you know, not saying this boastfully, but they were pretty good. I mean, the quality was enough to where people would say, wow, where did you get that at? And I'd say, well, I made it myself. And, you know, you'd kind of push the pin down, and it would release this paint. And then you would, I want to say it was called Grumbacher solution or something like that. And then when you ironed it, it actually, you know, kind of made its own iron-on, but it was actually a better quality than an iron-on. And and I did my own Elvis T-shirts, and so, you know, yeah, I was, you know, and even in one of the art classes, I made a, you know, I made a bust of his head, you know, and you know, and you know, dried it in the kiln or heated it in the kiln and all that. So I was always, you know, all of my artwork even had to do with Elvis. I was always a huge Elvis fan.
Wow. Now, you mentioned tracks. Do you ever perform with a band, or is it all to pre-recorded tracks? Because I see
people do both. Yeah, I actually have a full band that I work with as well.
Okay.
Thursday night, just because of the timing and logistics of everything, will be with the background track. I mean, I'll be doing the actual singing, but yeah, I still do shows with the full band as well.
Because it seems like that's the case with a lot of the tribute artists, depending on the budget and the travel time, whether they have a pickup band, their own band, or if they use tracks. And it seems to be, you know, any format's legitimate as long as you're singing, you know, the lead yourself. So
that's true. And you know, the thing that you know, that well, and you know, you were mentioning several artists that I'm familiar with, and some of whom I've worked with who do a great job, quite frankly. You know, they're the same way. You know, it's like Rick Sesito. Rick probably is one of the busier Elvis impersonators, and I don't, you know, a lot of people are like, well, they call me an ETA, Elvis tribute artist. I don't care, you know, for doing an Elvis show, if you call me an impersonator, I'm cool with that. That's fine. That's no problem at all, but I think Rick still does a lot of solo shows. I don't know if he works with a full band most of the time or with tracks, but I mean, I think he stays pretty busy, and I'm not quite sure what Trent's doing these days.
I think he's overseas, and then he was in Vegas for a long time.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. And then he's not out in Vegas these days then.
I don't know if he's still in Vegas, but I know he's the Italian Elvis, as they called him.
Right.
But I know he toured a lot overseas, and I just saw Rick. He was just here for the birthday celebration out here, and he's from the Oak Lawn area. And I saw him in 1977 for the first time with the Fabulous Ambassadors, and I saw him right before I saw the real Elvis at the Chicago Stadium, and then I went and saw him right after Elvis died. He did a tribute show with the Jordanaires, and J.D. Sumner. No, it wasn't the Jordanaires, it was the Stamps. J.D. Sumner was there, and they did this whole thing about it, and he was getting death threats from Elvis fans for saying they were capitalizing on him. He's like, dude, I was doing this before. Elvis, you know, didn't endorse him, but he knew about it. So it was a very strange world at that point when Elvis passed.
Right, for sure. I did the birthday show many, many moons ago up in
Star Plaza?
Okay. What did you call it?
The Star Plaza. Then it was Holiday Star, probably.
Yeah, the Star Plaza. Yeah. In fact, I did a gig there right after I had been on Letterman, and I was on there with Trent and with Rick Sesito on that particular show, and then Dan Lentino and the Fabulous Ambassadors.
Oh, yeah.
They were you know, did the job backing us. And did a great job, you know, as a matter of fact. So.
Tell me about some of the shows you've been on. I mean, you mentioned Letterman, but you've also been on Oprah Winfrey. You've been on Entertainment Tonight. How did all that come about?
A lot of it, to be honest with you, is because of, you know, at the time, it was because I was mayor. And, you know, and now, and then once I became a state representative, you know, initially, the media dubbed me the mayor of rock and roll. In fact, I believe it was the... I think it was the Dallas Morning News that gave me that title or something like that. And then later, after I was elected state representative, the media dubbed me the King of the Capitol, you know. And so, they find that an unusual, I guess you might say, an unusual combination of jobs. And I suppose it is, but it's, I don't hide from it. In fact, when I... You know, many times when I've ran for office, In fact, I may bring it up just to show it to you, but I get attacked. They'll use the Elvis show to attack me. You know, like the first time I ran for state rep, there was a flyer put out, and it showed, you know, they downloaded pictures of me off of my website, and it says, just what we need, another hound dog in the state house. You know, and just things like that, you know, and then the caption on the back that was used against me was, don't be cruel to, you know, to Hoosier families. Vote against, and don't give them a heartbreak hotel. Vote against Bruce Borders and so forth. But,
wow.
You know, the thing of it is, you know, even as a mayor, I worked. In fact, when I was mayor, I believe I was the youngest mayor in the United States at that time. I was 28 years old. But regardless, you know, if you work hard at doing your job, you know, people know that.
Mm-hmm.
And no amount of notoriety is either gonna make you or break you. As long as you're doing your job, and, you know, like the Bible tells us to do all things as unto the Lord. And so I've, you know, always worked hard at the job and always been truthful with the public. And as a result, they've been very, very gracious to me and continue to put me back in office.
You know, they did the same thing with Ronald Reagan with the whole bedtime for Bonzo thing. You know, they made it almost a joke of it, but yet he went down as a great president.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's like, you know, I tell people, hey, you know, if I were playing golf on the weekends, nobody would complain, you know, because I put on a jumpsuit and go out and sing, you know. I mean, why should anybody have a problem with that?
Right, exactly. And same thing with Arnold Schwarzenegger. I mean, okay, he's the actor. He took a lot of heat for the I'll Be Bach thing. But he was a pretty good governor. At least people kept voting him in, so that was their opinion of him.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, that's right.
So.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. In fact, a little. Speaking of notoriety, I do have not try to segue away from the Elvis conversation, but I have a cousin who lives in California. You've probably heard of Kurt Rambis.
Yeah.
That used to play for the LA Lakers. He's and then was a coach. You know, with the Lakers all those years they were winning championships. He's got, I believe, it's something like 9 championship rings as a player.
Wow.
And coach, yeah, his mother and my mother are sisters, so that's a little claim to fame in the sports world there.
So, do you ever get out there and do any performing in California?
Oh, I've done a lot out there. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. In fact, I've got a standing invitation to head out to L.A. out at a place in West Covina I've performed at before, and yeah, I've done quite a few shows in the Los Angeles area. Yeah.
You know, being a representative, being in any branch of government, when you are, you're putting yourself out there with a target, no matter what you do, someone's not going to like it.
Oh, sure.
And honestly, the pay that our politicians get are not that great. So why do it? I understand everyone says, well, I've got a calling for it. I want to serve the constituents, I want to serve the people. But it seems almost masochistic sometimes. You guys go up against so much. And no matter how hard you work, no matter how sincere you are, no matter how dedicated, there's always people that take pot shots at you. How do you have the thick skin to deal with that? I've always wondered that about any politician that, you know, that tries to do the right thing. And no matter how honorable their intentions are, there's someone trying to make them look bad.
Well, I think, you know, myself, I tend to... I was always one of those people that wanted everybody to like me. And I think, you know, to a degree, we're all like that, you
mm-hmm.
know, in the sense, I mean, I don't know of anybody that just, you know, says, you know, hey, I want people to hate me, you know, so in general, we want to be liked. But I also, came to the conclusion a long time ago that I realized there's, you know, going to be a fair amount of the people that no matter how hard I try, no matter how hard I work, no matter how sincere I am, they're not going to like me, you know, and how, you know, you hope that that's the minority if you're, you know, if you're working hard and doing, you know, doing the job right and you're being truthful with people. And so so that's kind of where I'm at with it. It's like I really do enjoy the public service aspect of it. I'm a huge fan of the Constitution. I still think the gravest danger that we've put ourselves in as a nation is because we've chosen to ignore it in so many ways, you know, and I mean a massive number of ways, both on a federal, state, and a local level. And I can, you know, would almost venture to debate with anybody on the issue that if we obeyed the Constitution, we would not have the you know, the problems that we've created for ourselves, because we've dug some pretty deep trenches to try to climb out of as a nation by disobeying the Constitution. And so I do enjoy, I love history, and I actually will just sit down some evenings and just read the Constitution and read the Federalist Papers, and then what they call the Anti-Federalist Papers that written by some of the authors of various parts of the Constitution and their explanations for what they were writing. And I love to teach that to the public in general. I've always loved that.
I mean, it's hundreds of years old, yet it's still the blueprint. It's still the template for a country that works. And
oh, absolutely.
It's amazing that even though so much has changed in the way the country acts, the technology, everything, the evolution of human beings, the evolution of the American public, that this old document can still represent everybody. And if it's taken at its word and not, you know, diluted, if you will.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. In fact, I truly do believe it to be a divinely God-given document, the best ever invented by mankind. You know, I'm not, other than the Bible, which is God-inspired, but I do believe that I believe the Constitution was absolutely a God-given document. And and I think that we ignore it at our own peril. I mean, I think we can truly destroy our nation by ignoring it. I really mm-hmm. do.
You've served the public since the 80s in office, in various offices.
Right.
What's next? Are you going to be satisfied where you're at in the House of Representatives? Do you have aspirations for governor or beyond?
Right now, I'm happy serving as a state representative, and in order to look at other aspirations, quite frankly, I would have to just kind of put aside some of the other aspects of my life, some of my other business, adventures and so forth. And so right now, my plate is pretty full, I'll put it that way. And I don't have other aspirations at the moment. Not saying that might not ever happen, but again, I would have to... I'd have to find a way to clear some room on my plate, quite frankly.
Okay. One thing I do want to touch before we let you go, and on your website, which again is bruceborders.com, and Bruce is my guest. He's performing at the Art Theater this Thursday in downtown Hobart, 7 to 9 p.m. as Elvis. One of the things on your website is the mention of Wolfman Jack. Now, Wolfman Jack is a personal hero of mine, along with Alan Freed and Dick Biondi. He was one of the guys that molded my style when I was doing commercial radio and doing the hey, rock and roll AM side of the dial thing. Wolfman was the epitome of cool. You worked with him. Did you? It says a tour. Now, how did that happen? Tell me about the Wolf.
There's a station down in the Virgin Islands called Isle 95. A very dear friend of mine owns it, and he's become a friend, since booking me. But he also owned a station in Baltimore. I believe it was in Baltimore anyhow. And they were doing an Elvis tribute show around Elvis's birthday, January the 8th. And anyhow, they did an interview with me, and later on, he was bringing Wolfman down to the Virgin Islands for a series of concerts. The Jonathan Keys is his name, the fellow that owns these stations. And he wanted an opening act for him. Well, I think one of the DJs up in Baltimore told him. He said, "Jonathan, he says we did this interview with this Elvis guy, and it really went great. I think you'd like him." And so I get this call out of the blue. I mean, I had no idea who he was. I'd never been to the Virgin Islands. And so he calls me, and we agree to the terms, and I fly down. And the Wolfman and I hit it off really well. I mean, we truly became good friends. In fact, his nickname for me was Monk. And the reason he called me Monk is he said I was the most conservative entertainer that he had ever met in his life, And he was always questioning me about my faith and so forth, which I would share with him. But we truly became very dear friends. In fact, when he passed away, his manager, Lonnie Napier, and Lonnie was also the lead guitar player for his show, He called me to see if I could come to his funeral, which was down in Belvidere, North Carolina, which is where Wolfman lived at. And unfortunately, I couldn't go because I had a prior commitment on a series of concerts that I wasn't able to get out of without being sued, quite frankly. And so, but it always meant a lot to me that the family, you know, reached out to me and said, hey, we'd like for you to make it to the funeral if you could. But in fact, we ended up doing the Virgin Islands together, and then we were in Las Vegas together at the Mirage Hotel, and then the last gig we did together was at the Warner Theater in Washington, D.C. In fact, I had Tony Bennett's dressing room. Tony would perform there the night before, and I was in his dressing room. They still had the sign on the door that said, Microsoft welcomes Tony Bennett. They helped put together the show or sponsor it or whatever. And then I opened up for Wolfman. And then typically what would happen is I would open up, and then just, you know, to be honest with you, he was in pretty bad physical shape at that time. Mm-hmm. And then he would come out and do his thing. And then I would come out and finish out the night just because he physically wasn't in good enough shape to do a real long set. He still was a great entertainer, but he was just physically not doing well. And we just became good friends. In fact, I would usually, as we did island hops from one island to the other and so forth, I would carry his luggage with him and I just tried to help him out in any way that I could. And I still miss him. And in fact, his real name, as you probably are aware, was Robert Smith or Bob Smith.
Right, Bob Smith.
Yeah, and and I asked him one time, we were eating out at a place, it was named after a shipwreck off the island of St. Croix, and anyhow, we were sitting there eating, and I said, Wolf, I said, you know, he just went by Wolf. I said, ask him, you changed your radio name from Bob Smith to Wolfman Jack, and he goes, well, he goes, monkey, he goes, it's like this. He says, it just doesn't have the same ring when you go, hey, this is Bob Smith. Whoa! You know? And I'll never forget that. And I've got quite a few photos of us together. I'll bring some of those up with me and show those to you as well.
But, those would be great to have for fans. You sign those and it's got you and Wolf together. That would be very cool.
Oh, he was a wonderful friend. I really loved him. And after he passed, I was truly heartbroken. I mean, to me, he wasn't, the world. In fact, we would tour together, people obviously recognized him, you know, and they were always coming up asking for photos with him and autographs. And he was always kind about doing that. But, you know, whenever he died, you know, the world lost an entertainer, and I truly lost a dear friend. I really did.
He was influential in breaking a lot of bands. I'm trying to remember where the station was. It was like right across the border in Mexico on the Texas borderline, I believe.
Right. Yeah, he was always selling. He'd sell baby chickens and then oil paintings of The Last Supper and, yeah, things like that. Yeah, he was had a lot of notoriety for the crazy stuff. Not that, the, you know, not mocking The Last Supper, but it's not something that you typically think of being sold over a rock and roll radio station, but they sold well. And in fact, he told me, though, I remember one night when we went out to eat, he was telling me about the movie American Graffiti, which was really mostly about him. I mean, it was
he was like the narrator kind of guy.
Yeah, the central theme throughout it. And that was, I believe, Steven Spielberg's first movie. And he told me that Steven Spielberg at that time didn't have any money, but he offered him a percentage of the profits if he would take a risk on him. And he said, Bruce, he said, we didn't even have hotel rooms or anything. He said, we'd sleep out in the field at night in sleeping bags. And he said they would bring in, you know, bologna sandwiches and, you know, cold cuts and stuff like that just to feed the crew. But it became a cult classic. And he said that was the singular best decision he had ever made in his life, was to do that movie and do it on a percentage of the profits. And he said that he would always be grateful for having made that decision.
Well, that was back in 73, and that's the thing that really put him on the map all across the country and around the world, was his famous cameo in that as the guy they kept popping up with the blonde in the Corvette, and his famous line, if I'm lying, I'm dying, you know?
Yeah. And he was really, like I say, he was a dear friend. And his wife, Luann became a really dear friend, and his son Todd is still pretty heavily involved in the music industry. In fact, I think at one time he was kind of, you know, booking some of the tour dates for Olivia Newton-John, and I'll share some of those stories about Wolfman. One I might share real quickly if you,
sure.
you don't care is we got a call about when we were down in the Virgin Islands about we were staying at a place called Stouffer's, which is a world class hotel, kind of for the rich and famous, you might say, there on the island of St. Thomas. And we got a call about doing a private party on the island of St. John's at this little restaurant that sits out over the Caribbean called Pusser's. And anyhow, they wanted Wolf to entertain, and they wanted me to come as well. Well, anyhow, his manager negotiated my rate, which, quite frankly, I would have done it just for the enjoyment of doing it. But he did a good job negotiating for me, let me put it this way. And when we got over there, they took us over on a private yacht, picked us up on a yacht. And the funny thing, it was on a Sunday, and Wolf loved football and the NFL. In fact, if you remember, they used to use him for a lot of Monday Night Football ads.
Right, right.
And so anyhow, as we're traveling across the Caribbean to go over there, well, first of all, he didn't want to go because he wanted to watch the NFL on TV at the hotel we were staying at, St. Croix, or I'm sorry, the Stouffer's at that point, yeah, at the Stouffer's restaurant. So they made him a deal he could hardly refuse. And from what I remember, the guys that booked him owned like a car dealership up in Miami, and whenever we flew back to the States, they flew him. A connecting flight down to Miami, and he got to go off the car lot and pick up whatever car he wanted off the lot for doing commercials for them and so wow. forth. And it was pretty neat. I mean, it was just kind of neat to see the business side of it mm-hmm. up close and personal, but also to just see the friendships that he made out of. Doing, and it wasn't just for the show that he did. He did go and entertain at their private party on St. John's, but he also cut some commercials for him, things like that as well. So,
well, Bruce, thank you so much for joining us. We are basically out of time. We're getting ready to head into the network news again, but I'm looking forward to having. I'm sure everybody is to hearing the stories and hearing you perform as Elvis again. Art Theater, downtown Hobart, 230 Main Street. Bruce Borders is Elvis. He's traveled around the world. He's worked and rubbed elbows with all the big names, and now he's coming right here to his home state of Indiana and the town of Hobart, and working for the Republican Party with the Indiana State representatives, as well as an entertainer, helping raise money for the party. So thank you, Bruce.
Hey, it's been my pleasure. Looking forward to meeting you. I can't wait to see your record shop as well.
All right, excellent. We're going to close out with Bruce once again, closing the way Elvis did with Can't Help Falling in Love.
Only fools relish in, but I can't help falling in love with you. Shall I stay? Would it be a sin if I can't help falling in love with you? Like a river flows surely to the sea, darling, so it goes. Some things are meant to be. Take my hand, take my whole life too, for I can't help falling in love.
like a river flows surely into the sea. Darling, so it goes. Some things are meant to be. Take my hand, take my whole life too, for I can't tell.
Thank you. Thank you very much.